Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the House Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee for this Friday, March 10th. And we have a quorum. And our first item of business is approval of the minutes. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would certainly love to move the March 9th minutes.
Okay, the March 9th minutes are before us and moved. All those in favor, discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Our first bill on the agenda is House File 2479, Representative West. Good to see you. And you have a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 2479 be referred to the General Register.
Okay, members, House File 2479 is before us, heading to the General Register. Please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's been a while since I've had a bill hearing, so I'm delighted to be up here. And I'm very grateful to Mr. Chair. For the last 4 years, all my bill hearings have been in this committee.
Right.
I appreciate that very much. But House File 2479 is a very simple bill. It allows DVS to accept titles in a limited fashion with an electronic signature and without need of a notary. And the primary reason for this bill is you have to do a lot of needless ferrying of documents when you're trying to transfer a title for a totaled vehicle. Insurance companies, you know, they might even use a courier, which, hey, that's more carbon emissions that we don't need for the left side of the aisle, and it's more efficient for government for the right side of the aisle. It's a really common sense bill, and I have Todd Hill with me here to provide a couple more details.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Todd Hill with Hill Capital Strategies, and I'm here on behalf of my client, Copart. I'm here in support of House File 2479, and just for background, Copart is a national vehicle auction service company with three locations in Minnesota, in St. Cloud, Ham Lake, and Minneapolis. And as Representative West stated, this bill will just provide in a very limited number of instances for DVS and the insurance companies to accept a title with an electronic signature. It will align Minnesota with a number of other states that accept this already. I'm not aware of any opposition to this legislation. We did provide DVS and the Insurance Federation with a copy of the language before we introduced it, and I believe everybody is okay with this. So with that, I'll just limit my comments to be very brief.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Does anyone have any questions of the testifier or the author? Discussion? Okay. Representative West, any final thoughts or comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I renew my motion to refer 2479 to the General Register.
Thank you. All those in favor of the motion to refer to the General Register, House File 2479, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed, the motion prevails. You're on your way to the General Register. Thank you very much. Our next bill on the agenda is House File 1482. Chair Mohler. And I will move Chair Mohler's bill to be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus transportation bill. And I see that we have an author's amendment.
We do, Mr. Chair. It's a DE2.
Okay. Members, the DE2 is before us. You want to let us know? I will move the DE2 let us know the contents of the amendment.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Since it is a DE2, it'd be basically my whole bill presentation, so I could go through that now or after you adopt it.
Well, this is just members getting the bill in the shape the author would like us to consider it in. So any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. We have House File 1482 as amended before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. So since I was first elected in 2018, I heard from a number of constituents about problems that they were experiencing with Metro Mobility's current hours, along with other difficulties they were encountering. And we had heard about other states implementing pilot programs with Uber and Lyft to provide on-demand services for passengers with disabilities. And so we set out to draft this bill with that in mind as a pilot for riders here of Metro Mobility. When we received the fiscal note back, we discovered that there were potential issues with the model that we had developed, and we wondered about that point about using the premium on-demand model that Metro Mobility utilizes with a taxi company that provides these services, including services with wheelchair access. And they use that with an on-demand app. Under that program, the rider pays the first $5 of the fare and then anything over $20. So we went back to the drawing board with this DE to use the premium on-demand model, the taxi cab model, for expanded Metro Mobility hours under this pilot program. And we learned that scheduling the taxi cabs for the hours we requested in our pilot would be difficult as an on-demand model, so the DE provides for advanced scheduling. And I note that the appropriation in the DE will be substantially less than the original bill anticipated because of these changes we made in consultation with Metro Mobility. I do have a couple of testifiers here today.
Thank you very much, Chair Mohler, and let's proceed with your testifiers. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. My name is Trevor Turner, and I'm the Public Policy Director for the Minnesota Council on Disability. The Minnesota Council on Disability thanks Representative Mueller for carrying House File 1482 and would establish a pilot program to enhance Metro Mobility services. Minnesotans with disabilities rely on Metro Mobility to live, work, and play in the communities of their choice, which helps fulfill obligations of the Supreme Court Olmstead decision. And paratransit is a right for people with disabilities under the Americans with Disabilities Act and must provide equal services to other transportation options, especially those that are inaccessible. One challenge that Metro Mobility faces, however, is that the demand far exceeds the number of drivers and vehicles available to provide paratransit services. This leads to long wait times and unpredictable service, which has severe consequences, especially on those who rely on the service the most. House File 1482 gives Metro Mobility significant freedom to try an innovative approach to enhancing its services and availability. The Minnesota Council on Disability has a few ideas on how this could be accomplished. However, they require additional legislative support. One solution is reducing the demand on Metro Mobility services is to partner with a transportation company like TNCs, like Uber and Lyft. TNCs have revolutionized travel and transit by providing affordable, convenient, on-demand rides in our state. However, currently in Minnesota, these companies do not offer wheelchair-accessible vehicles as part of their fleet. In other states and metropolitan areas, they have required TNCs to have a certain percentage of vehicles be wheelchair-accessible to ensure that these services are available to all. In Minnesota, we allow TNCs to discriminate against people with disabilities by not providing services to wheelchair users. And this can only be changed through legislation, so we implore members of this committee to take on TNCs and mandate equal access to their services. Without mandating accessibility of TNC vehicles, any partnership with the TNC company would put Metro Transit in violation with the Americans with Disabilities Act. Another challenge Metro Mobility has is hiring and retaining drivers for accessible vehicles. This can be addressed by paying drivers the same as they would pay regular Metro Transit bus drivers. While Metro Transit bus drivers are required to hold a higher class driver's license than a Metro Mobility driver, Metro Mobility drivers are required to have the training and soft skills to provide door-to-door services and work with people who have complex disabilities. This alone more than justifies pay parity with Metro Transit drivers. Competitive wages would attract more people to this profession and help retain Metro Mobility's workforce, thus allowing Metro Mobility to offer enhanced services for its riders. This cannot be done without adequate funding for Metro Mobility. Minnesota must provide this funding and support because without it, it leads to a degradation of services and violates the Americans with Disabilities Act. Properly funding Metro Mobility is supporting the civil rights for Minnesotans with disabilities. House File 1482 is a great move forward in the right direction to improve and enhance services offered by Metro Mobility. Public transit is a lifeline for people with disabilities, and paratransit services are even more critical. These services allow people with disabilities to be an integrated part of their communities, and without it, they face exclusion and isolation. Paratransit services are a right guaranteed under the ADA, and it's imperative that these services are reliable, convenient, and available for people with disabilities. The Minnesota Council on Disability looks forward to the results of the pilot program outlined in House File 1482, and we urge members of the committee to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier, you talked about Metro Mobility being in violation of the ADA. Can you be more specific as to what the violations are?
So the violation would be if Metro Mobility partnered with the TNC currently under ADA. The TNCs aren't required to have wheelchair accessible vehicles. So if Metro Mobility partnered with a TNC, they would be in violation because they, unless they require the TNCs to have a fleet of wheelchair accessible vehicles.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. So you're saying that in order to comply, Metro Mobility would have to have the wheelchair accessibility on all vehicles, even if they're not transporting anybody that needs it?
Yeah, proceed.
It would not require all vehicles to be wheelchair, but just a certain percentage.
Okay. Representative Petersburg.
So that would indicate then that maybe they're not in violation if there only needs to be a percentage, right?
We'll have Chair Mueller answer that.
Yeah, thank you. So the TNCs, that was the path we had initially gone down, but as we discovered, it was difficult for them to find even an appropriate number of those vehicles, Ubers and Lyft, that had accessibility. So that's why we shifted to the taxi cab model, the premium on-demand model. So I just didn't want to make sure we don't go too far down the TNC path, because with the DE amendment now, we've moved away from the TNC path down to the taxi cabs, because they're currently using those and they have wheelchair accessible taxi cabs. So we'd be just expanding the hours of the use of those cabs.
I'll let go for now.
Okay. Representative Sensenmira, then Representative Elkins and Nelson.
Thank you. And I just have a quick question about the TNC. So you said that, I know you're kind of talking about like further legislation or future legislation. So what states do kind of mandate the percentage of accessible vehicles for TNC, if you know?
We looked at, I think it was a couple of different cities that we had looked at. I don't know if it's Chicago, maybe Denver. Mr. Turner might know.
When Mr. I looked Turner. At it, I know that Illinois is one state. California also recently mandated that TNCs have a certain percentage of the fleet be wheelchair accessible. And New York City, and quite a few other metropolitan areas as well.
Thank you. Any follow-up, Representative Sensenmira? Okay. Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in my 8 years on the Metropolitan Council, Metropolitan Council members don't receive a lot of constituent complaints, but when you do, they're invariably about one of two things, either sewer availability charges or Metro Mobility Service. And I learned, as a result of following up on those complaints, that the there's a lot of value if you're serving someone with a disability and having the same driver, especially for someone who's on regular orders, someone who knows, where you're going to be at the door, what kind of assistance you're going to need to get from the door to the vehicle and onto the vehicle. And the fundamental problem has always been driver turnover. It's impossible for them to pay enough to be able to sustain driver stability for the community that's using these services. So, first of all, I think that the idea of requiring pay parity with regular bus drivers is a good idea. I think the point was well made that that providing these services may require different skills than a regular bus driver, but they're equivalent. There is a skill and value in having stability in this labor force so that the clients have a consistent level of service. In my freshman term, I carried a bill, I think, for Minnesota Council on Disabilities that would have established a surcharge to create a fund that would have been used for the TNCs to acquire wheelchair accessible vehicles. And one thing we might want to revive that concept again, because otherwise the TNCs are providing valuable services. It's a viable backup for people with disabilities that don't involve needing a wheelchair, we do need to provide wheelchair accessible services as well. So I'll connect with you, Representative Mueller.
Okay, thank you for your comments. We'll hear from Chair Nelson, and then I believe there's one more testifier. Okay, so we'll hear from Representative Nelson and then the testifier, and then we'll move on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mueller. Yesterday in Labor, we had a long hearing about Uber, Lyft drivers, TNC market. And you have to remember that the people who drive for Uber and Lyft provide their own vehicles. The TNCs don't provide anything to them other than a platform that they can access to pick up rides and then pay them for that. But these people are buying their own vehicles, so I think that's part of the issue of having, if we're going to require the TNCs to have a certain number of handicapped vehicles, then we're requiring individuals out there in the mail, they'll have to buy their own vehicles, and that's an added expense that currently, so the issue that they're having now, they're not making enough money to even maintain the cars that they have.
Thank you. Good point. Okay, let's hear from your final testifier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is Mark Hughes, my constituent, and he's to what Representative Elkins spoke about. I know he has a lot of experience with those issues as well.
Well, Mr. Hughes, thank you. Welcome to the committee. Welcome back to the committee. It's good to see you, and please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning. Chair Hornstein, by the way, before we get going, thanks for your time up in the office and helping us get this started. And Rep. Moeller, I want to be sure to thank her. I've heard Trevor's testimony is very good. Airport cab, when the wheelchair ban started, was John Cheetah and I that were involved in it. There were about 25 or so licenses given out to wheelchair bans. So at the time the program started, it was hard to promote. They weren't used very often. The problem we have with the wheelchair vans now is I think that they're running medical runs Monday through Friday or Saturday and not using them on Sunday nights when I might need when I can't get them. And so that part needs to be worked out. But I support this bill because Metro Mobility service hours have been cut back, and we have a company that has 24-hour shifts, so I need to be around and for other reasons. And also, I want to bring up that I've been involved in two pretty good accidents on Metro Mobility. And I found that Gallagher Bassett owned First Transit. Now First Transit has since sold the company. But there was a conflict of interest under general practice. And I want to bring that out. I went down and asked the Met Council also in the summertime, but when I heard the service hours were being cut in our area, and I said, would somebody please call me back, because I stated I'm not making excuses, feeling sorry for myself, but I am terminally ill. So now wouldn't be a good time to move, and I've got the best rep in the state of Minnesota, so I don't want to be. But anyways, I got no help back from the Met Council, and I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed in Metro Mobility's management. I might as well be honest about it. We're just running a program that seems to be managing itself. So let's try the cabs and see if we can get something more efficient, on time, do away with some of these curfews, and make the thing run for all. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Representative Moeller, do you have any final thoughts before we lay your bill? Oh, one last question from Representative Petersburg.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. That moved pretty fast after the testimony. I'm just wondering, this is Metro Mobility, and we haven't had even heard anything from Metro Mobility. I believe Mr. Carlson is here. I would think we'd want to at least hear from Metro Mobility, sure, about how it works and, okay, how it's going to work and the cost.
Okay. Fair enough.
And while he's coming in, I just should say, I know that we now have Metro Mobility forecasted so that it's funded in a slightly different way and projected for, but I think it's still important for us to know, you know, what the costs are, et cetera.
Absolutely. Yeah, they hadn't signed up to testify, so it is certainly a member's prerogative to call them down. So welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record, and I think you have a question on the table from Representative Petersburg.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Charles Carlson. I'm the Executive Director of Metropolitan Transportation Services at the Met Council. And Metro Mobility is a shared ride transit service for customers who are unable to use the regular route transit system. It's a accessible door-through-door service. So our drivers, which are operated through contracted services, provide customers a accessible transportation experience using an on-demand model. The service operates as a complement to the regular route transit system, which means the hours of service are really set by the underlying all-day local route system. And the geography of our service area includes the cities that are served by, under statute, through the, as defined by the Transit Taxing District and a couple other communities.
But Representative Petersburg had a question, and if you want to just repeat the question.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you so much. My question is actually in regards to this specific proposal in this particular bill, how it impacts metro mobility, its planning, how it would work, because this is a pilot that's really going to work for about a year and a half. You know, what is metro mobility's position here?
Sure. So this bill would expand the service hours and would expand the premium on-demand service program that Metro Mobility currently offers. Under this program, customers can get a taxi ride instead of a Metro Mobility ride. They would pay the first $5 of the taxi fare. Metro Mobility pays the next up to $15. It's typically a lower fare than that for the total trip. And then the customer would pay any amount above $20. In this bill, it would expand the hours of service, and the appropriations would cover the expected fees for those additional service hours. There are a limited number of drivers, as well as vehicles, providing any transit or taxi service in the region, and so there would likely be a cost to expand these broader hours. This is not a governor's initiative, so there's not specific support for this bill from the governor, but we are very happy to work with legislators. We've had a great series of conversations with the representative about how to improve service for our customers, and we're always looking to improve the mobility needs of all the residents of the region.
The last follow-up, Representative Peterson.
Yeah, thank you. Just in actual process, so Metro Mobility would stay the administrator and scheduler for these programs?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The way that that we assume the bill would work is that it would be a public program administered by Metro Mobility. The service delivery and the reservations would happen with the contracted taxi provider. However, there'd be program administration as well as customer service. If somebody has a bad experience, we want them to be able to contact public employees responsible for the program to make that right with the contractors. So we assume some of that work would happen through council staff.
And one last question.
Not a question, just comment.
Comment.
I think that last statement there brings the biggest concern, because when somebody has a choice of going to a taxi company or to Metro Mobility, they're going to go there, and we know that that's a little bit more expensive than Metro Mobility, and I think there's room for abuse there. So I would love to see follow-up after that, after this pilot is done, to see how that works.
Yeah, and thank you. The good points, Representative Petersburg, and we're laying the bill over, and the level of funding will depend on a number of factors, and so I think this bill is evolving, and but I really appreciate Representative Mueller, Chair Mueller, you're bringing this to us and identifying a real need for an important constituency here. So thank you so much for bringing this, and I appreciate our conversations early on about this. So any final thoughts or comments you want to share with the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Just, you know, to emphasize what Mr. Hughes said, and there have been a number of times he's reached out where he's unable to get to and from work because of the limited hours, and even things like sporting events or concerts that he wants to attend because there's just no ability to have these services. So I'm looking forward to further discussion and refining this bill, and I'll follow up with Representative Petersburg. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Mueller, and your constituent is not, Mr. Hughes is not the only one that is experiencing some of these challenges. So I think your bill is going to impact and potentially help a lot of people. So with that, members, House File 1482 is laid over. Thank you very much. Our next bill on the agenda is House File 2648. Representative Peters. Hello, Representative Petersburg. Thank you for bringing this bill to us. It's an important bill, and we'll be laying it over for possible inclusion, and that'll be our motion.
All right.
Please proceed.
So to introduce this bill, basically, over the years, we have two smaller funds accounts, the vehicle services and driver services accounts, and they get funneled income from various different things throughout the years. We have really tinkered around with them, et cetera. And one of the things that we've noticed over the years is that the driver vehicle services tends to get emptied a lot, and then the other one sits with lots of money, or at least more money than needed to be. But because of the way it was set up, the limitations on what they could be used for has made a difference. So basically, this bill just says, let's just combine those two accounts. Let's go through the statutes and change everything. So where it talks about one, it talks about the combined service, so that those funds are available for use in the transportation system. As we know, this is time where we need to start thinking about being as efficient as we can with the resources we have. And this is one more tool in the toolbox to allow the chair to have a little bit more dollars for discretion for some of the things that are available at one or the other of these services. And with that, Mr. Chair, I will certainly turn it over to you if you have any more comments about it.
My only comment is to thank you. I think this is a really good idea. I strongly support it. Representative Elkins has a question or comment.
Same question, your comment, basically. I think this is a really good idea. I mean, and the work that I know I've been doing with Senator Jasinski the last couple of years on the stuff for the deputy registrars and the whole DVS fee structure reform. This issue keeps coming up and posing an obstacle time after time after time. So, you know, merging these two funds together would simplify things so much. And I think one of the reasons we're seeing the driver's stuff, you know, emptied out so quickly is it's, you know, the Real ID program is just pushing a lot more cost onto that side. So I strongly support this.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? And anyone in the audience want to testify for or against the bill? Okay. I'll allow you to renew the motion this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will renew the motion that this House File 2648 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Okay. Thank you so much for the bill, and we appreciate your work on it. Okay. Our next bill on the agenda is House File 1346, Representative Kraft. This bill comes to us from Chair Cagle's committee. Representative Kraft, would you like to move your bill?
I would. I would move that House File 1346 be referred to the General Register.
Okay. Thank you very much. You have an author's amendment labeled A2?
I do. And the amendment does two things. There's one wording technical change, and the other is previously we had some wording in there about the training program required for installers, and that was because the rulemaking was not yet final. The rulemaking became final on the day before our hearing in sustainable infrastructure. So rather than including stuff in here, we just refer to the final rulemaking for the training requirements for installers.
Thank you for that. And members, the page is handing out a more updated engrossment of this bill. So we're amending the version of the bill that you're receiving now. So is there discussion to the A2?
So I would move the A2.
Yeah, so we're moving the A2, correct. Discussion. Although, Representative Petersburg.
I'm just a little confused. So what is the bill that we're starting with? Is that the 1346-1 or
yes,
the other engrossment? So the one that's just handed out is
346-1.
Okay, and so this is being amended to that?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
So the A2 has been moved. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. So now we have House File 1346 as amended before us. Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of members of the committee. In late 2021, President Biden signed the IIJA, or Bipartisan Infrastructure Bill, into law. Part of that law created the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Formula Program, or NEVI, which provides funds for states to install fast chargers for EVs. It aims to provide reliable, long-distance EV travel. Minnesota expects to invest about $68 million of federal dollars from the program over 5 years. There's a 20% non-federal match required, or about $17 million, bringing the total EV infrastructure investment to about $85 million. NEVI funds will be used to build out federally designated alternative fuel corridors for Minnesota. The two initial corridors are I-94 and I-35, but there will be more. Stations must be no more than 50 miles apart and within 1 mile of the corridor. After these corridors are completed, additional ones will be added. This is a simple bill that authorizes the program so we can unlock those federal dollars, spend both federal and other non-state funds to install EV chargers, and clarifies that EV charging stations could be at both public and private locations. With that, I have a testifier who can talk a lot more about the program, and so I'd ask her to.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair, Representatives. My name is Amber Dahlman. I am with the Minnesota Department of Transportation's Office of Sustainability and Public Health.
Thank you very much. You can proceed now.
As Representative Kraft outlined, the intent of this legislation is to help us establish an electric vehicle infrastructure program and allow for the construction of charging stations on or off of the trunk highway system and allow MnDOT to partner with third-party private vendors in maintaining and operating these systems. We're looking to, as Representative Kraft mentioned, amend the amendment to make sure that we can, that folks are trained appropriately and that they are paid appropriate rate wages, which is in alignment with the federal rules and regulations. This particular program does help us align with our climate action framework that we previously discussed with the Sustainable Infrastructure and Policy Committee, and it also aligns with the Minnesota Department of Transportation statewide multimodal transportation plan.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions or comments from members of the committee to either the author or the testifier? Representative Petersburg, and then Representative Murphy.
Are we going to have further discussion afterwards, or we have one more testifier or not?
Oh, do you have additional testifiers? No additional. We're into committee discussion now.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair.
I guess there is another testifier.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Hornstein and committee members. My name is Kathleen Schuler. I'm Policy Director with Health Professionals for Healthy Climate. And I'm pleased today to testify on behalf of the Coalition for Clean Transportation. And this is a group of, we promote sustainable and equitable electrification of our transportation system. And the members are HPHC, the Alliance, North Star, Sierra Club North Star Chapter, MN350, CURE, Fresh Energy, and the Union of Concerned Scientists. And we strongly support the authorization of a state program to implement the NEVI program. Electric vehicles benefit all Minnesotans by improving air quality, mitigating climate and health impacts, while also creating job opportunities and stimulating economic growth to promote a sustainable and resilient future for our state. As the largest contributor to climate change pollution in Minnesota, reducing transportation-related emissions is critical to meet our greenhouse reduction goals and reduce air pollution to protect public health. Transportation-related air pollution is a significant contributor to 10% of deaths in the Twin Cities metro area, and this disproportionately impacts BIPOC and under-resourced communities where residents live near highways. Reducing air pollution saves lives and prevents asthma, heart disease, and other chronic illnesses. This bill will guarantee the state's readiness to efficiently utilize the $68 million in federal funds that we would receive through NEVI to strategically build a connected, reliable, publicly accessible EV charging network, which will facilitate EV adoption by reducing range anxiety on longer trips, which is identified by consumers as a leading barrier to EV adoption. We appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of SF 1346. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony and your work in the community. Now, Representative Petersburg. Oh, anyone else? Actually, anyone else on this? Bob, very briefly. Very briefly.
Thank you so much.
Well, no, we have one more testifier.
Bob again. Hi, Bob again, Carney Jr., registered lobbyist for We the People. I have a patent filed on a system that can deliver either a small an electric charge or gas, hydrogen gas, to vehicles while they're moving. And the biggest problem with battery-operated technology is the battery. You know, you got 1,100 pounds for a Tesla. And so we need to figure out a way to either eliminate or drastically reduce the weight of batteries for electric vehicles if they're going to be appropriate, so if they're going to be used. So what I want to suggest is considering incorporating in this, I think we should definitely get the 80% federal money. No question about that, okay? We're all good on that. But we should incorporate some provisions that allow other alternatives to electric charging, including being able to supply smaller amounts of smaller battery chargers that can be loaded onto a vehicle while it's moving from a rotating structure above the vehicle. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Okay, we have three members, and then we'll proceed on to the next bill after this. Representatives Petersburg, Murphy, and Hudella.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to just talk specifically about finances. It appears that this is intended to be a policy bill, but creating a whole new program that includes construction and everything else is going to cost money. And I don't see where we have any kind of input from the department on what this is going to cost, et cetera. And I would think, Mr. Chair, would want to know some sort of guesstimate on what it's going to cost the department, because if you're going to create a brand new infrastructure program that includes contacting people, that can also be constructing equipment, operating, and the funding mechanism for how the fees are set up, et cetera, that's more than just a weekend time. And so just for you, Mr. Chair, I don't know what your thinking is about that, but I'm surprised we don't have a fiscal note or something for this.
Well, I'll ask the author and MnDOT to answer that question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Petersburg. So this is the policy bill. There is a budget bill that's coming from the governor that I believe will come here as part of the transportation omnibus. So there are funds coming. And also, you mentioned about the training part of this. The training part of this for installers is a national program that we're tapping into.
Anything else that MnDOT would want to add?
Chair, Representative Petersburg, I don't have anything to add at this time. As Representative Kraft mentioned earlier, we do have federal funds for this, and the governor's budget and bill does have matching funds for those. MnDOT is not looking to maintain and operate these facilities. That would be the responsibility of the party that looks to site them at their location.
I would just say I understand the matching funds and all that stuff, but there's going to be some input and some time management needed for that, which is concerning. And I'm always concerned if we want to pass a policy bill and then look at the finances after that. They should always be together, in my opinion. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for that, Representative Petersburg. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kraft. I had a chance to visit with my electric co-op last month, and they outlined this whole program. I'm a little surprised that you don't know what it's going to cost, because they did. They said it's going to cost $990,000 to put in a set of four pumps, four of those stations. Now, at $85 million, we're not talking about many, and I know there's one in Alexandria. There's they can use at Target there. But it's surrounded by about 20 gas pumps. The 20 gas pumps, they're full all the time. I don't know how we're going to get by very well with four chargers if this program, if this really takes off, and it will be expensive at $1 million roughly per set of four. It's going to be expensive. The other thing that I just wanted to point out, you know, this is a public and private partnership. And I've talked to private small business owners. I have a gas company. He has a convenience store. And he said, we want to be involved in the process. If there's something to be sold, we want to sell it. That's why we purchased the areas that we purchased. That's why we put our gas stations where we put our gas stations. So for us to consider to put these in public places really goes against the small business owners that really develop this whole interstate structure that we're looking at. So I hope that it isn't very strong. I hope our public presence isn't very strong, and we really focus on these small business owners that built this whole system to begin with.
Brief response, Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, a couple things. We know the cost of $990,000 is something that we know about that. Sometimes to get a system going, you have a chicken and egg. You have to get stuff out there. And I would love to see us have to come back and do more of these. It is, when we say public-private partnership, the intention of this program is to do an RFP and have private folks, at least to be located on private locations where they can reap the benefits as well.
Thank you, Representative Hudela.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Petersburg. I might shed some light on why, Representative Murphy. I might shed some light on why those pumps are empty, but Representative Kraft, can you tell me what the percentage of electrical vehicles are on our roads in Minnesota right now?
Representative Kraft.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hudela, I don't remember the specific number, but I think it's in the 1 to 2% range.
That sounds accurate to me. Representative Fidella.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The figure I had was one half of 1%. Representative Kraft, can you tell me what the projected number of percent of EVs on our roads will be by 2030 if everything goes right with the governor's green energy plan?
Representative Kraft.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hudela, I don't have that number off the top of my head. It'll be a lot more than it is today.
Okay,
it's around the 20 to 30% range is my understanding.
Yep. Just one more follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Correct. Proceed.
So the figure I'm looking at was 20%. You're right, it's a lot more. What I'm trying to get at is we're looking at billions and billions of dollars of taxpayer money. And I hear a lot of times in other committees as well, well, we have a federal match. Well, a portion of those federal tax dollars come from Minnesotans as well. So, I'm just looking at equity with folks that don't have an electric vehicle in these small percentages, yet we're looking at billions and billions of dollars where even in the best case scenario, 7 to 10 years from now, it's still going to only be 20%. So just a concern that we're going too fast on this, and my fear is that chicken's going to lay a rotten egg for our taxpayers.
Thank you. That was a good soundbite. even though I disagree with it. Final comments, Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a simple and important bill to start building out this infrastructure, which is absolutely critical to the transition that we must make. The Earth does not negotiate with us on what we need to do here. And this is an intelligent way to get things going. This is one part of a broader picture of a larger transition that I'm excited we're being part of. So I'd encourage everyone's support.
The Earth will not negotiate with us. Another good soundbite. The freshmen. The freshmen are stepping up, members.
We're on our game.
Okay. Thank you very much for a good test, a good discussion from both sides of the aisle on this. With that, please renew your motion.
I would renew my motion that House File 1346 be re-referred to the General Register.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed, the motion prevails. So next up on our agenda is House File 1741, Representative Engen. Representative Engen, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein, and thank you, members of the committee.
I will be, we'll move this bill for referral to the Tax Committee. I'll make a recommendation that we move this bill out to the Tax Committee. So please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. So House File 1741, in its essence, it's pretty simple. It's pretty straightforward. It just increases transparency in our transportation infrastructure spending. The bill directs counties in the metro area to submit a biannual legislative report on the uses or proposed uses of dollars generated through transportation sales tax, specifically in regards to guideway projects, as defined under Statute 473.4485, Subdivision 1. This section of statute allows for spending transparency in projects such as arterial or highway bus rapid transit projects, intermodal facilities, intercity passenger rails, commuter rails, and light rail. Through this biannual report, taxpayers can be made aware of the proposed projects, some of the things that are going to be in the future that they're footing the bill for. We want to make sure that they have an understanding of what their county is going to be looking like in the future and where those dollars are being appropriated today. And we're not also bogging down those counties with overly burdensome reporting requirements. So one of the most bipartisan issues that I heard about on the campaign trail last cycle was that Minnesotans love their infrastructure. They need it. All of us got here today with it. And if we are giving folks some accurate depictions as to what the future is going to look like regarding that, it seems like a win-win. So thank you, and be happy to answer any questions for you guys.
I want to thank you for bringing this bill. I think you identified the transparency issues quite accurately. Would like to continue to work, and I support this, and that's why we're hearing it, but I would like to work with you. You know, there might be some other additions. There's other counties that have, outside of the metro, that have local option sales taxes for a variety of projects, including transit, but also roads. And I've heard maybe they could be included. I've also heard potentially, you know, there's a threshold, you know, how much spending, you know, might want to trigger this. So right. Those are just a couple thoughts I have as we move forward, but I think it's needed, and I appreciate your...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to work alongside you in this.
Okay, any other discussion? Representative Kraft.
Just a question, too, and I apologize, I was walking back. Why is this metro only?
Well, that probably is a question for the author.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Kraft. I think overall this was something that I wanted to deliver for my constituents who were worried that they didn't understand how they were a partner in some of the local projects that were being proposed, in particularly White Bear Lake a couple of years back with bus rapid transit. They wanted to feel like they had some skin in the game. They understood what was going to be happening as well as what they were currently looking at for designs and whatnot. Yeah. That's kind of my personal reason for bringing this forward. But simultaneously, we've seen some of the spending disparities in certain projects where folks are wondering and asking, what's this cost? How long is this going to be taking until I can use these things that I'm funding through the transportation sales tax? That's why I think it's more centralized to the metro county area where those projects are occurring. Of course, we need public infrastructure for these guardrail projects. But we also need some parity in the transparency of that spending.
Okay. Thank you. And Representative Kraft, I don't know if you're still making your way back, but, you know, one idea, there's other counties outside the metro that utilize something similar, and that might, again, something to think about and talk about. Representative Elkins.
Comment in the form of a question, why just transit guideways?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question as well. So, but on this one, I think... you know, we've certainly had some challenges getting some data, and I think just in general, transparency is a good idea when we're spending public dollars.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions or comments? Okay. I'll renew my motion that House File 1741 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you for bringing the bill, and have a good weekend.
Thank you so much. You as well.
Okay, next on our agenda is House File 2570, Representative Cagle. Chair Cagle.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I would move that House File 2570 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Okay, that is the motion, and I believe you have a A1 amendment.
Correct. I would like to move the A1 amendment, and this just clarifies that the entity would have to have an agreement with a power purchasing agreement with the Minnesota utility.
Okay, is there discussion? All those in favor of the A1 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 2570 is a very simple bill which will help us meet the 100% carbon-free energy goals that we passed last month. By modernizing some of the regulations that control how we connect energy projects to the grid. Modern wind and solar projects are often built for public utilities and their customers by developers. The PUC continues to control the process, maintaining the consumer protections and authority over routing and siting, environmental permitting, and other aspects of the project. But modern projects are often not built directly by public utilities, and MnDOT's permitting structure does not recognize that. So House File 2570 fixes that by making it clear that entities such as public utilities or developers have the right to use trunk highway right of way for electrical transmission lines subject to regulation, and an entity that receives a route permit by the PUC for high voltage transmission lines necessary to interconnect electrical power generation with the grid does not necessarily need to be a public utility itself in order to site the line along public roads. These are simple changes, but clarify the regulatory process for applicants who are building clean energy infrastructure for Minnesota customers and for the regulatory agency that oversees the project. We have several testifiers here to support the bill, including a developer from NextEra who can address these changes from the company's perspective, as well as Great River Energy, who will discuss the changes from the perspective of the public utilities. I want to point out in your packets letters of support from other public utilities, including Minnesota Power, Minnesota River Energy System, and they weren't able to get a letter in time, but Kent Sulem asked I share Minnesota Municipal Utility Association's position on House File 2570 is identical to Missouri River letter of support for the bill. Other support letters include the Clean Energy Economy Minnesota, Minnesota Conservative Energy Forum, and then the 100% campaign. So with that, I will invite up my testifiers.
Thank you. And if the testifiers could keep their testimony to 2.5 minutes and under or so, that would be helpful to our agenda. Testifiers?
In the next era.
Is there anyone in the audience that wants to testify for or against? Oh, we have one.
Thank you, Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Today.
Sorry, I thought someone else was going first. Thank you for the opportunity to testify here today in support of HF 2570. My name is Danelle Herzig. I'm the Director of Renewable Energy Development for NextEra Energy Resources. I've had the opportunity to develop projects around the country and right here in the state of Minnesota. NextEra is a world-leading generator of renewable energy from the wind and sun. We have invested over $1 billion in Minnesota clean energy projects to date, scoping back to over 20 years ago, our first projects. And we have plans to invest at least another $1 billion in renewable projects in the coming years. These projects are being built to benefit Minnesota electric consumers, but are also needed to meet the nation-leading goals and requirements set by this legislature just last month. NextEra strongly supports HF 2570 because it helps resolve two issues. The first issue is how challenging it currently is to bring clean energy projects online considering the limited capacity of the state's transmission system. And the second issue is the difficulty of getting successful clean energy projects through Minnesota's unpredictable regulatory environment. Regarding transmission, NextEra and other developers are having to become increasingly creative in order to connect clean energy projects to the grid. In the case of one project, that means building the project over 25 miles away from the existing Great River Energy substation that has adequate capacity to bring the project online. Unfortunately, that particular project was unnecessarily delayed by at least 2 years because some agencies have not contemplated a developer building a transmission line on behalf of a public utility. The Minnesota Department of Transportation added confusion and delay to the project due to their read of Minnesota law. HF 2570 seeks to bring clarity to the statutes on modern energy generation practices and buildouts. Given the inadequate capacity of the current transmission system, many renewable energy projects will need to be built further from substations with the capacity to accept the generation. Our Minnesota projects in the queue face this exact same problem. HF 2570 takes an important first step towards that solution by clarifying that a developer receiving a route permit from the Public Utility Commission to serve Minnesota electric energy consumers is treated the same as the public utility itself would be if it were building the line. This simple fix gives the state agencies the clarity they need to process projects in a more predictable and efficient fashion. HF 2570 is a common sense solution. It removes a very significant blockage to meeting Minnesota's carbon-free energy objective and supports low-cost, reliable, clean energy generation the state's utilities need to meet the state's goals.
Thank you very much for your testimony. What I'd like to do, are there any other advocates of the bill that would like to testify? And then we're going to hear from Commissioner Daubenberger.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay, so one more advocate and then Commissioner Daubenberger. Two more and then we'll hear from the commissioner. And again, we're reminding testifiers to keep within our time limits. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. Good morning to Chair Hornstein and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of...
Could you please state your name? I'm sorry.
House File 2570. I am Beth Soholt, Executive Director of Clean Grid Alliance, a Minnesota-based nonprofit organization working to advance renewable energy in 9 states in the Midwest, including Minnesota. Clean Grid Alliance has worked on transmission issues for over 20 years, along with Minnesota Electric Utilities, the Mid-Continent Independent System Operator, who operates the grid in the Midwest, and other stakeholders. We work extensively with renewable energy developers, such as NextEra, here today. Clean Grid Alliance supports House File 2570 because it is needed to achieve the 100% carbon-free by 2040 bill that was recently signed into law. Adequate transmission capacity and the ability for new renewable energy projects to tie into the grid to deliver clean energy to Minnesotans is one of the top challenges right now in Minnesota. Time is of the essence for transmission and renewable development in Minnesota. You can construct a new wind farm or solar farm much faster than transmission can be developed, so we need to make use of existing interconnection points as much as we can. As you heard from NextEra, renewable energy development is currently backed up with nowhere to connect to the existing grid. House File 2570 is a needed fix to a current problem that will only get worse as time goes on if we don't pass this bill. Allowing renewable energy developers to parallel existing right-of-way will avoid unnecessary impacts to private landowners. It will make prudent use of our already existing land and help Minnesota utilities achieve the 100% carbon-free requirements. Just to note, current law 2216E encourages transmission to parallel existing right-of-way. That's already in law. Now, we're going to hear from the MnDOT commissioner, and we realize there might be additional changes to the law that MnDOT is thinking are needed, and we're in active conversations with them to understand what those changes are. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and we encourage you to support House File 2570.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Believe we have one more testifier in support. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Hornstein, members of the committee. My name is Zach Rizicki. I am the Director of Resource Planning at Great River Energy. We're a Minnesota generation and transmission cooperative. Thank you for the opportunity to come and speak to the committee today. We're not not-for-profit wholesale electric cooperative. So we provide electric service at cost with all of our margins going back to the members that we serve. We don't have shareholders. We have members that own and receive electric service from Great River Energy. We serve two-thirds of Minnesota geographically and parts of Wisconsin, and we generate electricity and transmit it through high-voltage power lines to 27 member-owner cooperatives and customers that provide retail electric service to homes, farms, and businesses. We've been thoughtfully planning the transition of our power supply portfolio for over a decade now, and that transition includes a large amount of renewable energy. Our current portfolio is a balanced mix of cost-effective reliability resources and renewable energy resources. We've signed more than 1,600 megawatts of competitive wind contracts as a source of carbon-free energy and as a hedge to the wholesale energy market. And in the next 3 years, we expect the last 900 megawatts of that to come online to begin serving our members. 500 megawatts of that wind is right here in Minnesota being developed by our partners to take advantage of their scale and experience in developing these resources. These resources and their development are critical to our business plan and how we've built ourselves as a co-op. They play a central role to GRE meeting the new carbon-free standard and the renewable energy standards. This bill helps to ensure that all of our members' wind gets to the market and provides an economic development opportunity for Minnesota to help make sure that that renewable development needed for compliance with these new standards remains in this state. Let's find a way to work together as utilities, developers, and as a state to achieve our renewable energy goals. And thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you so much. And we have Commissioner Daubenberger here, and I wanted the commissioner to hear some of those comments. And I, before her testimony, I also want to thank you, Commissioner, for working with the various interested parties. I understand that a lot of progress has been made, and thank you for your availability to do that. So please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, and after Commissioner Daubenberger speaks, we can have some committee discussion. Welcome.
Thank you, and good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nancy Daubenberger, and I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Transportation. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House File 2570. MnDOT supports efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and understands the need to construct additional electricity transmission lines so we can meet the state's goal of 100% renewable energy by 2040. To that end, MnDOT is in the middle of a public outreach process and rethinking the use of trunk highway right-of-way to accommodate more opportunities for utilities, such as electricity transmission, broadband, and potentially others. We refer to this as the next-gen highways. That effort includes consultation with numerous stakeholders, including utilities, the Department of Commerce, the Public Utilities Commission, local governments, and others. This process is designed in part to help develop any legislation that we were planning to bring forward next year. This started with a first phase, which began in 2021, when MnDOT activated a work group of more than a dozen MnDOT offices, the PUC, and Commerce to evaluate expanded uses in the right-of-way. And in 2021, MnDOT joined an externally initiated feasibility study to evaluate technical and regulatory considerations for next-gen highways, highways that strategically co-locate transmission lines with broadband in the highway rights-of-way. And the result of that work is the next-gen highways feasibility study that was released in April of 22. So MnDOT is currently in phase two, planning to conclude that effort with more engagement with our transportation stakeholders and partners later this spring or early summer, and that will inform changes to our utility accommodation policy, which we'll be doing later this year. In the meantime, we're going to allow the NextEra to install their transmission lines on trunk highway right-of-way for their project in Dodge and Maurer counties through an exemption to our current utility accommodation policy. This is part of a pilot project to help us learn how we can be more accommodating to non-public utilities in our highway rights-of-way. It's important to note that MnDOT already allows public utilities to be located on trunk highway right-of-way, and NextEra is not a public utility, so that's why it's taken some time to look at this and work through the challenges associated with this particular project.
The language in Section 1 of the bill says utilities shall not be prohibited from placing transmission lines on roads road rights of way. This language is a concern since it would not allow a road authority to deny installation based on safety issues or roadway operations related issues like drainage. This would be highly problematic. Also, we believe that MnDOT already possesses the authority to allow the installation of NextEra facilities, and changes to the existing statute are not needed. With the existing statute, it states they may be constructed, placed, or maintained across or along any trunk highway or the roadway thereof by any person, persons, corporation, or subdivision of the state. We're working to establish reasonable requirements for MnDOT to allow the safe installation of these facilities. On a related utility accommodation issue, when interstates were first being constructed, it was not uncommon to encounter utilities already located within the proposed right-of-way. So at the time, it made sense that utilities be compensated for having to relocate. Since then, state allowed compensating utilities for their move in interstate right-of-way has continued to apply, even when such utilities were placed within pre-existing interstate right-of-way, fully knowing that they may be required to move in the future. In previous years, MnDOT has proposed that these new utilities placed on interstates from this day going forward are not to qualify for this payment, which is the case on all other roadways in the state. All existing utilities on interstates would be grandfathered in and continued to relocate at taxpayer expense. The cost of the current approach can be significant. It's on, for example, on the Highway 116 and 494 interchange project several years ago, utility relocations added up to about 10% of the project cost.
Commissioner, if you could wrap up, you know, we are laying the bill over. There'll be more conversation, but if you could wrap up, that would be helpful.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In closing, MnDOT's preference would be to wait till our next-gen highways public consultation process is completed and evaluate changes needed to our policy later this year and pursue legislation next year if needed. If you do move this bill forward, MnDOT respectfully requests that Section 1 be modified and you amend the bill to specify that utility relocation costs on interstate be at the expense of the utility for any new utility installation.
Thank you for allowing
me to testify.
Thank you. We have two questions, and then we'll move on to our three, and then we'll move on to our next bill. Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The commissioner here brought up concern about not being able to evaluate for safety for these lines. So my question for me, I think the author or the commissioner would be, even with this bill, these would still be evaluated on case-by-case basis, I believe, by local governments and the PUC. So wouldn't this still be, regardless of who's putting the lines down, still be well within regulatory framework that's already existing? This just allows another entity?
Commissioner or the author?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The PUC would continue to control the process, so they would maintain the consumer protections over routing, siting, environmental permitting, and other aspects.
Okay. Follow-up?
Thank you, Representative. That's what I thought it was. I think especially with the bill that has been signed into law, the 100% by 2040, this is the kind of thing that absolutely must be done, because if bureaucracy gets in the way of something that's already going to be very, very difficult, we can't allow that to happen. So I think I'm happy to see this bill. My old Senate district companion Cagle, so I will happily support it, even though we're just laying it over right now. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Fidella.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be super brief. And thank you, Representative Cagle, for bringing this forward. I don't have any issues with the bill. I just have potentially a suggestion that could benefit both MnDOT and taxpayers. My only initial concern was maybe opening a can of worms where we're having private for-profit companies potentially operating within that right-of-way that we traditionally have held for utilities exclusively. I would suggest that any for-profit company working in that right-of-way provide a percentage of net revenues back to MnDOT to help offset future funding shortfalls, additional costs by the agency, and I think that's incredibly fair. It's a way to bring potential revenue into our transportation infrastructure here in Minnesota, and I think it would help mitigate potential for-profit companies trying to come in and maybe not have the best intentions with it. So thank you.
Thank you for your comments. And then we'll have a comment from or question from Representative Petersburg, then Representative Elkins, and then we'll move on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Originally, I had some concerns with this bill. I think the amendment actually resolved most of those, and so now I'm more neutral, and I'm certainly not going to oppose the bill. But it raised, as I was thinking about it, it raised the question about our limited right-of-way access. And Mr. Chair, sometime in the future, we may want to consider how we deal with that, because it's not an unlimited space. And so as we get more fiber optics and electrical and all that stuff within it, we're going to have to figure something out. And just as yesterday we talked about scooters and other things having to pay a fee in order to have access to that right away, we may want to consider something like that into the future. And I think Representative Hodella talked about that maybe this is one of the things that it is no longer just free because it is limited, and look forward to that. So maybe we can have a...
Well, and Representative Petersburg, I have thought of that too. So good point. I appreciate that. Representative Elkins.
Real quick, just an observation, first of all, that Wisconsin has already passed legislation like this and is already starting to do it. And the second one, that in order to realize the objectives of Representative Kraft's bill, we're going to have to do this, because if we put high voltage charging stations all along our highways, they draw a lot of power, and so if we don't have transmission to those chargers, especially when we get to the point where we have truck chargers, which draw much, much more energy as well, we're not going to be able to execute our charger plans.
Thank you. Good point. So, Representative Cagle, just before you wrap up, I again want to thank the commissioner and the pilot project, I think, is really important progress here. But as the issues that were surfaced today, I hope here in the next few weeks some of those can be worked through and resolved. So I appreciate the advocates and the commissioner coming to testify. Representative Cagle, any final comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. We're in this like really unique moment where we have an opportunity to really shape our infrastructure going forward, and so we need to go. We need to do it. And so I'm really excited that we have this opportunity. And with that, I'll renew my motion that House File 2570 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you. House File 2570 is laid over. Okay, we have one final bill, members. Representative Tapke, Vice Chair Tapke. Okay, Representative Tapke, you have a motion and a couple of amendments.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. Yes, we have... move 1322 to be referred to the Public Safety Committee.
Okay, we have a motion to move House File 1322 to Public Safety, and to your amendments.
And then we have the DE1 amendment, which just takes 1322 and puts it in the format that we'd like to talk about for transit safety in the next phase.
Okay. And again, this is the bill, members, so we're just getting the bill in the shape that the author would like us to consider it in. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. So we now have the DE1 before us. Representative Tapke.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. I first want to start off by thanking everyone here. We have been talking a lot in Transportation Committee about transit safety and the needs that are there, and I just appreciate the chair and everyone's time to have full, robust conversations about the needs on transportation, but also where we on transit, but also where we want to go with things and what we want our transit system to be into the future here in Minnesota, throughout the state of Minnesota, and then especially in the metro as well. And so what we've got is we've been talking about this for, at least I've been talking about this since 2019 is when we started this project. So this DE1 amendment, what this does is takes what we've already talked about with the intervention program to make sure that we have intensive work being done to help people who need help, but also enforce the rules that we have, and being a good transit rider, and being creating a safe and comfortable ride for everyone. And so this takes that first phase and also combines it with what we've been working on for years now, which is creating Transit Ambassador Program, which is now Transit Rider Investment Program. So TRIP personnel, and what this does is it puts additional eyes and ears on the throughout the entire transit system, and takes and creates administrative citations so that we have anybody who is authorized is able to enforce the code of conduct, that they are able to enforce fair payment, but also to make sure that they are available and able to help people who need help, and to carry Narcan and other things. And so I am just open for questions as we discuss exactly what the bill will do in the limited amount of time, Chair.
Let's thank you. We'll have your testifiers first, and then members. We can go a few minutes over today, which I anticipate we will. So let's get to the testifiers first, and then we'll have committee discussion and questions. And I'm going to ask the testifiers 2 minutes, please, and I'll be pretty rigid on that one. So Mr. Shetnin is first, followed by Mr. Schroer.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Judd Shetnin with the Metropolitan Council. I'm the Government Affairs Director, and I will be very brief here, knowing that we are short on time, but I am going to echo Representative Tabke's comments and thanking the members of the committee. This committee in particular has been very supportive of this work that we're doing in transit safety and security, and we support Representative Tabke's efforts here again this year, and we're looking forward to continuing to work with him as this bill progresses through the committee process. And as Chair Zelli has mentioned in the past, this is a priority for us as well, and we want to make sure that we are finding the sweet spot and being able to provide additional eyes and ears on the system, but also make sure that we're not making a fare evasion a misdemeanor. And we think that moving forward with this administrative citation program is by far the way to go. So I'm going to stop there. You've heard from me many times, and so thank you very much, and thank you, Representative Tabke, and I look forward to continuing to working with folks on this.
Thank you, Mr. Shetnin, and thank you for all of your work over many years on this issue. Next, we have Mr. Will Schroer.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is Will Schroer. I am the Executive Director of East Metro Strong, and I thank the Representative Tabke for this work as well. Like Mr. Shetnin, I've been before this committee a couple of times, and I don't want to repeat myself. On the other hand, we have some new members, and I want to sort of remind everybody of some of the national best practice bases that that this work draws on. When Representative Tabke first started this conversation, East Metro Strong members were also very interested in improving safety. They commissioned a conversation with chiefs of police from around the country who had started similar programs to see what their experience had been. And our research is going to be shared with you by the committee administrator. Thank you to that. I want to hit just a couple of high points. The first is that the proposed approach in this bill is a national best practice. Chiefs of police and transit agencies around the country that have adopted these programs find that they work. They improve rider satisfaction, they improve safety, and as a result, chiefs of police and transit agencies around the country continue to invest in these programs. You'll see in the material when it gets circulated that the number of agencies around the country that use an approach like this is extensive. I count 20 on my slides. And I know that as the success of these programs it becomes better known, they continue to expand, and hope we get to add ourselves to that number. The last thing I'd like to then end up with is that we and other transit agencies are emerging from a COVID experience, and that's impacted agencies in a variety of ways. Want to just bring you the experience with a couple of other agencies as they have used these programs to help respond to COVID. All of the reasons that these programs work additional presence, rider assistance, just additional eyes so that people feel like there's someone in authority in those spaces. All of those worked pre-COVID and are extra valuable during COVID at a time of reduced ridership. Literally just yesterday, SEPTA announced Bay Area Rapid Transit System announced that they were extending their program precisely because of the value that it had had during COVID and to help returning riders feel more comfortable. At the same time, LA Metro announced that its ambassador program, and that's what they call it, I like the trip name, LA Metro announced that their ambassador program had been so successful that they were expanding it to 300 ambassadors in that announcement.
Thank you, Mr. Schroer, and I appreciate your bringing us these national examples. So.
Thank you for your
time. And your support of this over the years. Next, we have Bentley Graves.
And Mr. Chair, as Mr. Graves comes down, Mr. Schroer's had a PowerPoint that I'll make sure gets to the entire committee.
Okay, that sounds great. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Graves. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Bentley Graves. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Minnesota businesses depend upon a safe, reliable, efficient, and multimodal transportation system to get their goods to market and their employees, customers, and input materials to their door. For many employers in the metro area, the metro transit system continues to be an important means of drawing employees from across the region to their sites. For some employees, public transit is the only means of transportation available to get to and from work. In recent years, however, safety concerns within the metro transit system have increased significantly. Just weeks ago, the Met Council released new data indicating that crime on the metro transit system increased by 54% in 2022, with narcotics and weapons complaints increasing 182% and 145% respectively, and liquor law violations increasing by 92%. We support House File 1322 as an important step in addressing the safety issues that exist within the metro transit system, with a particular focus on the light rail system. We're hopeful that the bill's establishment of a new transit service intervention project on the light rail system in the coming months will begin to address the many social service challenges that often underpin and sometimes fuel the kinds of behaviors and situations that pose a safety risk to riders. It's our hope that this near-term action over the coming months will lay the groundwork for the longer-term solutions in the bill through the Transit Rider Investment Program and the increased focus on fair and code of conduct enforcement. The state and region have made and continue to make significant investments in the metro transit system, both in terms of maintaining an operating system and in terms of continuing to build it out. However, if people do not feel safe using public transit, they won't use it. If safety concerns keep riders away, public transit cannot be the complementary component of our transportation infrastructure that we need it to be. Thank you for the opportunity to provide this input. We appreciate the leadership of Representative Tabke on this important issue, and we encourage you to support House File 1322. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your support. And our last testifier, we have Bob Again Carney Jr. testifying again. Welcome back to the committee. Please state your name for the
record. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bob Again Carney Jr., and I'm a registered lobbyist for We the People. And by the way, this says make transit great again. You'll be seeing more of this. At the moment, I'm not supporting this bill, and the reason is I don't think it's adequate. I parked at Dale and took the light rail in this morning. Asked one man who happened to be black, do you ride very often? He said, no. I try to avoid this whenever possible because, and I can't repeat what he said after that, but it is quoted in the second paragraph of the Star Trib article I had on this, summarizing recent discussions on transit. It's a bunch of unprintable characters. And we have a huge problem here. It is really a serious problem. Now, I've been working on advocating different alternatives for transit and have not been a fan of light rail, but really we need to take back our light rail system to the point where at least people can feel safe and riding in a clean environment. So I have a 7-point plan in this article, and I would hope that some members will take a look at it and introduce it as an amendment at some point in the process of considering this bill. The basic idea is we've got three light rail cars typically, and we can establish a gated community by simply having certified go-to cards, making sure that people are not going to be disruptive or disobeying rules. And if they have one of those, or if they have a recent airline ticket, they can get on the car at either end. Otherwise, they're going to have to move to the middle car. We need to have a gated transit community so that people that are riding a light rail car can be assured of having a safe, clean car to ride. And this is especially important for people coming into the Twin Cities, going down to downtown via the airport. So I urge everybody to take a look at this 7-point plan to improve this bill, and I hope that it's incorporated as an amendment, and if it is, I will support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Carney. Okay, members, we have three members that have signed up to make comments or ask questions. We'll start with Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Tapke, for coming up with an actual idea for how to fix our system here, so I appreciate that. Can you shed some light on the differences between the administrative citations and the actual petty misdemeanors, the misdemeanors? Because from my understanding, an administrative citation has very little teeth, whereas something more like a misdemeanor citation would include some teeth legally. Is it just if it's a police officer who stops me when I'm on the train versus some person who has a notepad and, it's got the yellow pink receipt carbon copy on it that says this is your administrative citation?
Excellent question. Vice Chair Tapke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Olson. Yeah, I think that's probably how it happened in, like, 1983, 84, something like that. No, you are absolutely correct. That is the goal of this, is we need to have, like I said earlier, more presence on throughout the system. It's not just this, as we talked about the intervention program specifically, that was strictly blue line and green line. That's where we need to focus right there. But this next section is throughout the entire transit system, through ABRT lines and other places as well. And so with that, it is the intent there is to have more eyes and ears out there and being able to enforce and help people who need help. So that's your spot on.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yep, real quick. I appreciate it. I think it's an idea that due to the fact that we're so low on our actual peace officers here in the state and in Metro Transit in particular, more people, just anyone policing in a, in quotes, these trains, these pieces of transit, I think it'll help. If an administrative citation has almost no teeth, maybe it has a little more teeth than just letting people do whatever they want while on the train. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've been working with Representative Tapke on this, and he's come a long way and done a lot of good things with it. I have two primary concerns. One is that I'm going to paraphrase, because I don't think I have it exactly right, what Chair Cagle said on the floor last night. Which I think is important for us to remember. And what she said was, we are not legislating for the best of us, but legislating for the worst of us. And whereas I don't think that's true for 100% of what we do, it is oftentimes one of the reasons why we're doing the things we're doing right now. And so where this program that you have in place, I think, is really dealing for those that want to abide by the law and those that are having mental health issues and social issues, I think this works very well. But the problem is that we're also dealing with the criminal element that has already shown that they do not care to abide by the law. And so I'm not sure that we're going to get there with this, but this helps. In response to that, though, I've talked to you about two other things that I think this bill is lacking a little bit. One is that the trip personnel, nothing in their requirements says they actually have to ride the train or the bus, or whatever it might be. And whereas I don't think we should prescribe that here, I do think that should be the responsibility of the manager and whatever to set up what policy and process they do in order to make sure that there is some ongoing presence in between stations as well. And the other question is just when officers and others are asking somebody to leave the car or the bus, doesn't mean they won't hop on the next one and continue to do the same situation there. So what is it we can do in order to keep that from happening? Otherwise, all we're doing is moving from one train to the next. So those are two areas that I think still need to be worked on, and I know you're still in the process of doing that, but it's giving you, hopefully giving you some food for thought. My biggest concern, though, is that the criminal element has already used this train for so much already. It's going to take a little bit extra work in the beginning in order to get that turned around, and I'm not sure this does enough for that particular section of it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
A brief response, Vice Chair Tapke, and then we'll move on to Representatives Sensor Mira, Cagle, West, and then a vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Petersburg. And, yeah, I completely agree with you. There's work that we need to do here yet to make sure that those things are very clear and moving forward. So, yeah, we'll absolutely continue to work together, and as we've got a few more committee stops to get there.
Thank you. Representative Sensor Mira.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Tapke, for bringing this bill. I hesitate to comment on this op-ed commentary because I don't see the elements of this incorporated into your bill. And as far as I know, no one on this committee is going to bring this as an amendment. But partly because it was published by the Provident Paper of Record, I do feel the need to comment on this. We have had an approach to transit that was the gated community. We have had transit that allowed people of certain races to ride it and people of certain races to not ride it. And as I think the only person on this committee who would have at one time, closer to the 1920s, as in this op-ed is cited as the golden age of transit, not been able to ride transit, I think that whenever we're talking about safety, I think that's a really important history that we need to be remembering. I get concerned whenever I hear people kind of talk about, like, we need a reset, we need a moment of like extra push, extra work about who is gonna be sacrificed within that. And so I just urge you to continue to remember that history as the bill goes on.
Thank you for your comments, Representative Sensor Mira. And Vice Chair Tapke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Sensor Mira. And I just wanna reiterate and thank you for all of your work on this bill and helping it get forward to a place where it can absolutely make sense, because the end goal is to make sure that we have as many people as possible riding the trains, and making sure that we have as many people as possible using the transit system, and making sure that it is available and comfortable and a great ride for everyone. And so that's the goal of the bill, is exactly where you're at, and we'll continue to work forward and make that as good as possible. Thank you.
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Tapke. I just want to thank you really for your thoughtful approach to this. Especially appreciate the adding trip personnel to the administration of opioid antagonist drugs. There was also one other thing in here. Oh, the not prohibiting sleeping, because I can't tell you how many trips I've taken where I'm traveling, and I just want to take a nap on the something about those trains, kind of. Anyway. And also the training piece about, opiate antagonists as well. I think that is really key. And I think, too, looking at this piece of legislation, it really just kind of reminds me of the testimony that we had from the Metro Transit PD director. And so that this piece of legislation is really focusing on, reflecting the fact that we have been leaving people behind. And we need to do better for those people. And I think this will make a big difference. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. And we started our morning with Representative West, and we'll end our hearing with Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Always gracious, and it's very much appreciated. So previously, before the massive crime wave on the light rail, we talked about in this committee a lot about fare evasion and fare enforcement. And I think that's something we've kind of forgotten, is if we did better fare enforcement, I think that would have a positive impact on the environment on the light rail. So I see you have some provisions in here to help with that. And I'm curious, what do you expect, or if there's been any study done on the increase in fare enforcement with this, the paid fare zones? And if you don't have a number of what you expect there, what would be your goal?
Vice Chair Tapke.
Mr. Chair, Representative West, so I don't have a monetary goal for this. As we had talked about this previously, the money from the that is brought in through more additional fare enforcement and those kinds of things was going to go into a pool of money to fund this program. But as we thought about that more and as there were discussions about it, it was a feedback loop that we just don't need. And so what we hope to have happen is that this program altogether in totality is going to make it a safer, more comfortable ride for everyone, which will therefore increase fare collections and make sure that we have a more sustainable financially sustainable system.
Yes, please, Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, I wasn't so concerned about the total money. I was thinking more, and you don't have to answer this. This will just be a comment. More on the proportion of riders that are actually paying the fare. I think that the higher proportion that is, the better behavior we'll have on the light rail. So my hope as this moves forward, and this is, we, like many members have said, step in the right direction, is that there are more paying riders, not for more money for the government necessarily, which would be a side benefit, but that paying riders, I think we can expect to behave, you know, more likely to behave by the code of conduct than other things that are proposed. So I think that is something that should be a goal for the very reason that I think those two things are very highly correlated. Of more paying riders means better riders. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Final comment. Thank you, Representative West. Final comments before we vote, Vice Chair Tabke.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and everyone for the good conversation on this. I want to make sure something I neglected in the beginning to draw people's attention to is line 613 and 614, providing direct navigation assistance and accompaniment to passengers who have a disability, elderly, or request enhanced personal aid. And so what this specific item is for is for folks like Aiden, who we heard at our last discussion about these bills. And so Aiden has Down syndrome and testified in front of the committee, and he's scared and concerned about riding light rail again. So we need to make sure that we are welcoming and inviting everybody who wants and needs assistance in using the system. And so what this will do is have the trip personnel acting as navigators to help people through the system. And so if Aiden wants somebody to ride on the train with him from Apple Valley to Bloomington or whatever that is, that he has someone along with him and anybody in that same situation to help them and continue to improve the system and get more people using it where it's necessary. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and everyone for your support and feedback.
Thank you, members, for a good discussion on this bill and actually for all the bills today. With that, Representative Tabke renews his motion that House File 1322 as amended be re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety, Finance, and Policy. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. All of those opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you, members, and we will be meeting at our normal time and location next week. Be on the lookout for possible additional hearings in the next couple of weeks. With that, we are adjourned. Have a great weekend.